So I'm a physicist. I work at the NSEL, which is the National Superconducting Cyclotron Laboratory at Michigan State. We're founded by the National Science Foundation and Michigan State University. And before I talk about TICL, I'd like to introduce a little bit what we do. So what do we study? We study the nucleus of atoms, but not just any nucleus. We study the exotic nuclei. As you probably know, the stable nuclei found on Earth are only a small fraction of the possible nuclei that you can make. The others, which have different number of protons and neutrons, are unstable and eventually decay back to the stable ones. We also call those nuclei isotopes, which basically means nuclei with the same number of protons. That comes from chemistry, so they have the same, belong to the same chemical element. So if you plot those nuclei on this chart as a function of neutron number and proton number, you see the each little box here corresponds to one nucleus. And the white little box here that you see are the stable nuclei. And on either side, you have what we call neutron-rich isotopes, and on the other side, proton-rich isotopes. So how do we, you have to be able to study those, you have to make them. So how do we make them? Well, yesterday we heard about, you know, shooting missiles to comets. What we do here is we shoot nuclei to each other. And we used a reaction called projectile fragmentation. Okay, and since it's quite difficult to put a sensor system on a nucleus and aim it at something which is 10 to minus 15 meters across, we basically accelerate stable nuclei to one sort of speed of light and then randomly break off a piece by smashing them on a fixed target. After that, we collect the fragments and we filter out those that we don't care about. And finally, we do an experiment with them. So we use big machines for tiny particles. They're not the biggest machines, but still compared to the size of those particles. We use cyclotrons to accelerate the stable nuclei, and then a fragment separator to select the good ones, and finally some kind of device or experiment setup to measure the properties. All those machines require strong magnets. And at the NSEL, we use superconducting magnets where we can have them a little bit smaller and also use less power. So I have extracted a little movie here from a movie called Nucleus Factory, which shows what happens in a projectile fragmentation. You can see most of those beam particles go through the target without doing anything, but sometimes one of them interacts. And then some of its nucleons, protons or neutrons, are removed, and you end up with different nucleus. This just loops so you can see it again. As far as nuclear reactions are concerned, this piece of metal is basically empty space. Do it again. Bam. So then it's something new. So our setup looks like this. We have two cyclotrons in a tandem, and here is just showing the case of accelerating krypton 78 to this energy, which is roughly a third of speed of light, and then we put a target after that. But after this target, basically what you get is a lot of things. Basically every possible piece that you can make out of this nucleus you get behind the target. And if you're interested in just germanium-60, that's a little bit too much for your detectors. So after the first section of this fragment separator, you have a little less of the other stuff, but it's still too much for our detectors. So then we use some other methods by slowing down in some piece of material. We can basically select just a small subset of those nuclei, including, of course, the one that we're interested in. So why is it so interesting? Well, there's many answers to this question, but two I have retained is that you may know that most of the elements are produced in stars. The Big Bang was a Big Bang, but it basically made helium, and that was it. So it turns out that the nucleosynthesis in stars proceeds via exotic nuclei. So it is therefore very important to study those in order to understand how they make the elements, such as uranium. So star or supernova produce exotic nuclei, and then once they are produced, they decay back to stability. So therefore, we need to understand how those nuclei behave and what are their properties. Not only their structure, but also how they react, how they interact when there's a reaction. The second reason I've selected is that the nucleus is a quantum many-body system governed by the strong force. We know many-body system governed by gravity, that's the solar system, and we got that pretty much figured out. And we also know quantum many-body system governed by electromagnetic force, that's the atoms, and that's very well described by QED, quantum electrodynamics. But we don't know very well how a many-body system governed by strong force behaves. And in particular, we need to know how property changes when we vary number of protons or neutrons. And we can also learn about the fundamental interactions, the strong and the weak force, and the symmetries. So how does a typical experiment happen? It's basically a chain of observation. So some phenomenon happens at the nuclear level, and then all of these particles are detected by detectors, and then we get signals from the detectors, which are measured by some electronics, and then the data from the electronics is read and stored by a computer, and then a computer manipulates the data and displays or makes some kind of a representation, and then finally, there's a physicist who looks at the display and tries to understand the phenomenon here. So all the links here in this chain are quite important, but the last link is critical because the displayer needs to accurately show the data in a representation that relates to the phenomenon as much as possible. So basically, display, you're trying to go back to what's going on here as much as you can. In practice, that means you want to show each event which happens in a representation which is based in some physical units that the physicist can understand. So basically, we very often also look at needles and haystacks. And as I would just say, the accuracy of the data representation is paramount, not only for the analysis of the experiment, but also when we do the experiment, we need to make sure that the data we're taking is sane. You don't want to, 2 weeks later, find out it was all garbage. So at the NSCL, we use the spectacle program that Ron Fox wrote, which is an analysis program which can sort, filter, and accumulate data in histograms. And then they are stored in memory, and they need to be visualized and manipulated by physicists. And this is the purpose of the program that I wrote, SPECT-TK. Here I put that it should be user-friendly, but mostly physicist-friendly, which is a different requirement, because physicists are a little bit like children. If you show them something, they will immediately start to elaborate all kind of theories of why it looks like this. So if you show them something wrong, their conclusions are going to be wrong. So that's why. So I just wanted to show two examples of needles and haystacks. So this is related to the diagrams I showed before. This was an experiment which was run for a few days. And as you can see here, we have three needles, three events of germanium-60. And this is the haystack. And in that case, it's actually not so bad because we are pretty much background free. So the haystack is on the side and needles are well separated. So here, basically, we're measuring a velocity, which we call time of flight, the time it takes for them to move. And then here is an energy loss, which is how much energy they lose in a piece of material. We get a signal for the strength of this energy loss. Another example is this. This is a gamma spectrum. So this is an energy here, and it's just number of counts. But you can see that here, each of those transitions corresponds one of those shapes here just because of the response of the detector. So we need to basically understand how the detector behaves and then relate that to what we observe here to finally find out that there was indeed a transition here at about 7 MeV. So here's my crowd-pleasing slide. I think TKLTK is really a language for other people than just programmers and computer specialists, people like me. And I should say that I would have never written this player without TKLTK and BLT. I wouldn't even think about writing it. So what did I use? In the TKLTK framework, I used the client-server network communication, which is really straightforward to use and very convenient. And also, the feature of TKLTK that I find very nice is bindings, which is really great for graphical user interaction. I use also InkerTKL, which is nice because it gives an object-oriented programming environment and automatically does namespace encapsulation. But mostly I use the BLT package because the graphs that it provides had almost all the desired functionalities that I needed for building the display. And also in combination with vectors, which really are very powerful and real, well matched to the graphs to store and manipulate the data. I also use the trees from that package, although I learned yesterday that there might be some better alternatives. And notebooks, of course, that's everywhere now, and this is the... So what is the architecture? Basically, I wrote SpecTK as a client of a spectacle server, so I basically made a small script to make the spectacle into a server. So, of course, it has all the advantages that you see here. And the internal architecture is fairly simple. I basically store the histogram data in BLT vectors, and then I also store the two-dimensional, which are basically arrays, but I store them as indexes because most of the time those spectra are mostly empty, so it takes much less space in memory. Plus, it allows me to use all the calculations that BLT provides on vectors to do all kind of calculations on the histograms. And then the graph widgets, of course, I just embedded in class them. And we also have what I call region of interest objects, which basically are filtering objects that we use to sort the data depending on some criteria. So here is just a short aperture. I'm just not going to go through the whole list here, but it's basically some kind of a three-pane thing where you have a notebook in the middle with a tab notebook in the middle so you can multiple pages of display of different histograms, a toolbar on the side, and then a button bar on the bottom. If I have enough time, I will show you a small demo. So just to finish the presentation, it's mostly written in TKL. I still had to implement a few commands in C++. But also in that case, the API from BLT was really a great help, especially for manipulation of vectors. So I implemented a command to make a TKL photo image to make the representation of two-dimensional histograms, because that's not provided in BLT, and also to filter data inside polygon objects. And also, since I was using this client-server architecture, I wanted it to be as fast as possible. So I wrote some C++ code to send the data in binary format. And it was originally developed on the Mac OS X, but it was very easy to port it to Linux and Windows as well. So there's some improvements I am thinking of. If I have time, because that time is my biggest constraint here. Custom fittings. I have some fitting already here I can show you. And, of course, user feedback is always the best things for improvements. So if I still have a little bit of time, I'd like to show a little bit in action. So this is how it looks. And... I have a drawer This is, of course, inspired by my favorite operating system. And so the this drawer also has a tab MacBook with various things which I can do on here. So it allows, for instance, to change the geometry of the pages. Each page can have, you know, so it makes it very convenient to see different spectra and different histograms, and one can zoom easily. So all this is very straightforward. And I don't think I have time to go through all the features, but for instance, one can do statistics on each of those spectra. So here's my little zoom button, and this button here shows that, you know, the number of counts in the histogram, as well as some mean value and RMS for these events in that case. And then one can also do fits based on those objects, on those things, and you basically can get the results here. The other thing is I found it very convenient when I'm in my office and somebody calls me and say, hey, this spectrum looks really strange, okay, and what's going on? And I can just connect to their spectacle and then look at their spectra from my office without having to go down there. So because of the client-server architecture. So here's the spectacle main control window, and you can see here that I have one client connected, and that I could have as many as I want. Actually, I can start another one. Let's see. This guy is not responding. All right. Start another one. I think it's confused because of network. There we go. Oops, that was wrong. So one of the things I also made, and which is really nice, is to be able, so now that I connect with this one, I have two clients connected, and I can simply display the similar spectra. So this tree here is reconfigurable depending, the histograms have names and they have separators, but I can easily change the separator, which then rebuilds the whole tree depending on what separator or dividers, I call them, I select here. And so that's quite convenient. You can make them a pretty logical way. So for instance, if I have this guy here, and then I can edit this what do we call a contour here, then because it's talking to this spectacle server, you see it moving on the other client as I move it around. So I can play tricks on people. And I mean, there's other some features I couldn't resist doing this one. If I can make it work. Because it's so easy to implement with BLT. Yeah, I need to blow it up first. So, but apart from this two-dimensional color coding, basically everything else here is done with BLT. And if you just look at this one here. All this is just using, you know, what's provided in BLT. I can put error bars, and then I can basically remove this. So then, okay, let me show it here. So this is the kind of things that, you know, physicists like to look at, because they can see that, this amount of data is pretty well reproduced by this fit. If you don't see the error bars, then you don't really know what the quality of the fit is. So I think I will stop here. Any questions?
Between your client and your servers, are you actually exchanging these data sets?
That's right. Yes. So, yeah.
Do you have any trouble with performance getting this large amount of data?
Yeah, right. But usually the amount of data is not that big. As I said, when it's one-dimensional, it's very small. When it's two-dimensional, of course, it depends, you know. But since I'm not sending them as, I'm not sending the array, I'm sending them in an indexed form. Actually, I have two modes where I can switch depending on which one's the smallest. So usually it's fairly responsive, yeah. But that was one of the things I thought could be a problem, yeah.
So the polygon we saw there, you're telling the server spatially which events you want to have in your spectrum analyzer.
That's right. Wow. Yes. So this polygon then I can use to condition other spectra. So basically, when we have events like this, it's a multidimensional array. So there's many parameters, and we can only look at 1D or 2D representation of this whole thing. So we need to make cuts in different dimensions and then look at how those apply to other dimensions. So it's.
And then the colors in that spatial thing, is that energy?
No, this is number of counts. So those are histograms.
Okay, right.
Yeah, all those are histograms, yes. So they are frequency plots.
Is your code available?
Oh, yes, it is. Yeah, I put it in the paper. But you have to also download Spectacle. I mean, it's only useful with Spectacle, NSCL Spectacle.
Well, I don't have a cyclotron at home, but it would be very useful for me to see your techniques for other things.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yes.
But I'm hoping to get one off eBay.
Yes.
Wasn't there a GUI design tool called Spectacle back in the 90s?
Yes.
So this is called the Spectacle.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. Okay, thank you.